Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. I'm your host, Stone Payton, joined by my co-host, Lee Cantor. How you doing, Lee?
I am doing awesome. Did you have a good weekend, Stone?
I had a great weekend. I tell you, Friday was tough. I got his ticket.
You got a ticket?
Yeah. This guy pulls me over, gets
for
out
no
of the
reason.
Car. For no reason whatsoever. I have tennis shoes older than this guy, but he pulled me over because I've got an expired tag, and they have a lot of fun with you. You know, he was trying to give me an opportunity to get out of it.
Really?
Well, not really, but, you know, it's just, you know, it's Friday afternoon. The guy's having fun with his job. I did not fall for the bait. I said, look, a lot of contributing factors, no excuse. There's nothing you can do to me that's going to compare to what happens when I get home and my wife finds out I have not renewed these tags in 2 months.
Did that work?
Yeah, well, he was very nice. He was very nice about it, and he wrote me out this nice little citation, and that's where I'm headed after the show is to get my tag renewed.
Nice. And then does that make the ticket go away?
No.
Sorry to hear that.
Tell us about our sponsor this morning.
This morning, the show is sponsored by Plexus Marketing, a business-to-business marketing service firm offering custom-fit solutions in four key practice areas: lead generation and management, marketing campaign support, customer satisfaction and retention, qualitative and quantitative market research. www.plexusmarketing.com. That's PLEXUSmarketing.com. 770-390-9692.
And we really do have a great show for you this morning. Our first guest is guaranteed to put you to sleep, but that really is a good thing this morning. We'll talk more about that. And then after that, we have a gentleman up who is a marketing expert, and we're going to ask him some questions about what does it really take to be effective in marketing in a slow economy. But first up is Rock Connor with Fusion Sleep. Welcome to the show, Rock.
Well, thank you.
So what exactly do you guys do over there at Sleep Fusion?
Fusion Sleep is a complete sleep medicine program. We can go all the way from initial assessment, diagnosis, and the polysomnography, all the way to implementation of the oral appliances to treat sleep apnea or medication in some point. Other appliances include the continuous positive airway therapy that's more properly known as CPAP. We even have an ENT who can consult about the surgical interventions for sleep apnea.
And can you spell polysomnography?
No, but I can say it very well.
Well, is sleep really a business issue? I mean, why would we want to talk about that in a show like this where we're talking about producing better results in less time in a business environment?
In general, sleep is neither more nor less a business issue than any other health issue. The problem with sleep disorders is that they can be hidden. We're so used to not, as a culture, not recognizing and acknowledging and treating sleep disorders. So we end up with people who are less functional in their wake time. So they're less effective. They get less done in their family lives and their personal lives and for their employers.
Can you share a little bit about what some of the symptoms are? Like, could an employer tell if one of their employees had some sort of sleep problem? Are there some behaviors that they're doing that tips it off?
Well, none of these are conclusive. But certainly falling asleep in the afternoon meeting is a big tip.
That's
a big one.
And the coffee on an IV drip.
There you go. Also, you can hear tales, legendary tales about road warriors snoring or the guy in the room next to him snoring, that kind of thing. Now, neither of these in and of themselves are conclusively determinative of sleep apnea, but they're good signals that you need to get something looked into.
So, yeah, say more about sleep apnea, because that's a term that I've heard. Tell us more about that.
Apnea means without breath, and sleep apnea means going without breath while you're asleep. It's actually been described for a long time in the Pickwick Papers. We see one of the Dickens characters who fell asleep all the time. And it was considered, funny over the centuries to have the grandfather or the uncle or the father whose sleep was legendary, and people would compare how loud they snored. But it actually can have a great effect on an individual's performance and thought process and cardiovascular health, including shortening one's life with issues relating to heart or lungs or kidneys.
So what's happening, like, when that person is, like, what causes snoring? Like, you're just sleeping, and then all of a sudden the person sounds like they can't breathe, and it's just this loud noise. Like, what's happening in your body that's causing that noise?
There's some variations, but the classic event is when your airway relaxes because you've entered into a deeper part of sleep, and you try to take a breath, and the airway's blocked. Your body will go through a breath cycle or two like that, then it'll get real insistent. It'll start drawing extra hard to get the breath in, and the tissues that are closed over kind of flop up, open and closed. You get that snoring sound. It makes a loud noise in the room. It makes a loud noise in the middle of your head and brings you in and out of the kind of sleep that you really need for your brain to regenerate, to process short-term into long-term memory, that kind of thing.
And the really scary thing is when somebody's snoring and they all of a sudden stop. That used to happen to us at the hunting camp with Jack. Jack Coleman would snore like Yogi the Bear, and you could kind of fall into his rhythm, and it was all great right until he went, it just went totally off. What's happening there?
Well, they're actually having the apnea period. The snoring, I mean, it sounds scary, but they're actually moving some air in and out. When absolutely nothing is happening, no sound whatsoever, you might be in a period of actually being without breath, and that can last up to a minute or more. And they compound, those events compound over the night to keep you out of deep sleep and also keep your oxygen level down in some cases, your carbon dioxide level up. It's just a bad thing to have.
Can you die? Can you, like, just stop breathing and you just die from that?
That's typically not what happens. You don't die tonight of sleep apnea. Typically, you die of an accumulation of the events over the years and the accumulation of the challenges to your heart and lungs and your kidneys.
Because it's stressing everything out by not having air. Your body is just struggling.
It's making the system work really hard, and it's making your brain work when it should be in regeneration.
And you're a patient, too, not just a clinician, right?
Indeed. I'm on both ends of this thing.
So how do you fix it? What do you do about it?
Well, you can treat it. The ideal situation, and again, there are many disorders, and among them is sleep apnea. And among sleep apneas, obstructive sleep apnea is very common. The typical person with obstructive sleep apnea is over 40 and a guy who's overweight. Again, there are many variations, but for that particular person, the ideal thing is to get down to an ideal body weight. That's the best solution. There are also oral appliances that can actually hold the jaw in a different position to advance it that gives you more airway room. And there are surgical interventions, and the one that I'm most familiar is CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure, where you actually wear some kind of mask appliance on your face that holds air in your airway and splints the airway open. And that's what I actually do on a daily basis, is help folks get to be friends with their CPAP systems.
And that's something you can do at your house? Like, you don't have to go to those sleep labs to do this?
Well, you have to go to the sleep lab to have the condition diagnosed and the proper CPAP level identified. But then the equipment that you use is, you use it at your house, you use it on the road if you're traveling. We've got battery systems you can use while camping, on an airplane, you can do it anywhere.
Is it hard to sleep, or you just get used to it?
Yes, to both. it's kind of an unnatural act to go to sleep with those kind of winds in your airway, but yes, you do get used to it. And in fact, those of us who have become accustomed to it and are living much better lives because of it won't do without it.
How long does it take before you have a noticeable improvement in your life?
It depends on how horrible the symptoms are. For example, if you're a person who has very severe headaches when you wake up or the afternoon or next afternoon, typically on a daily basis, and those headaches are related to sleep apnea, then the first night you have a good night's sleep and it's followed by a day without a headache, you're hooked. You're all over it. Yeah.
And the technology on those machines, it's really, really improved, hasn't it? Aren't they smaller, quieter, all those things?
They really are. I've been on a CPAP system for about 15 years. So I replace mine about every 5 years. I try to be good and use it till it dies. But every time I get one, the footprint is half the size of its predecessor, and the noise output is half as much as its predecessor.
How do spouses feel about this unit?
It depends on how they feel about their spouse living longer. typically, a spouse is much happier with whatever problem the machine presents than they were with the snoring and or the knowledge that there was a cumulative effect messing up the health of the spouse.
Well, I have it on good authority that you drive some 50 miles one way to go work with this outfit at Fusion. What is it, if there's anything in particular, that you believe Fusion is doing better or more effectively in this particular market than maybe some other people in the space?
Well, I was very much sold when I first learned about them. I was very much sold on the concept of a beginning to end system for treating the whole sleep, treating with the whole sleep medicine program. And then when I got there and met the people, the principals who run the organization and also the clinicians involved, I was very pleased with the patient, the way the patients are actually the focus of everyone's activities. The CEO, Sigurjin Christensen, is actually an excellent leader in both assembling and continuing to guide people toward, you know, let's take care of our patients, let's take care of our customers, let's take care of each other. Makes a good environment to work in. And, yeah, you know, I'm a healthcare professional. I drive by several hospitals to get to where I go every morning, and I'm happy to do it.
Is there any way that you guys get the word out other than, like, I guess your doctor refers the patient? The patient goes to their doctor, and the doctor refers them to you?
Well, primarily, we market to make physicians aware that our services are available and that we can partner with them, or we can handle their patient sleep therapy for them. We also do some, not direct marketing, but community events. For example, the Awake program that we're sponsoring here on the 30th of October, just not necessarily to get folks in to see Fusion Sleep, but to make people aware of sleep apnea in general and the dangers that it can cause to with driving impairment and health impairment, and the opportunities all over Metro Atlanta to be evaluated and treated for it.
Do you know what percentage of people might be suffering from it?
Opinions vary. What everyone seems, the consensus seems to agree that there are 12 million or more Americans that suffer from it. It's along the lines of diabetes in America. And of course, you know, you see all the advertising about diabetes and the marketing for the management of it, and sleep isn't quite on that level. But we think the numbers are about the same.
So you need a better PR people?
Well, yeah, we want people to be aware of it, yeah.
Maybe get you booked on a radio show, something like that?
Oh, yeah, on a Monday morning, maybe.
All right. So if I'm an individual or I'm an employer, maybe I want to provide some kind of benefit for my employees and demonstrate some genuine investment in their health, where can I call? Who can I talk to? Do you have a website with information? Talk to us about how to get in contact with you.
Well, for general information about sleep apnea, we want to make sure that folks know about the American Sleep Apnea Association's website, and that is sleepapnea.org. And they do a great job. They're not there to market for you to get in and do a sleep study at their location. They just want people to know about sleep apnea. And they've supported us in a great way with our Awake program that we're doing on October 30th. Both in providing ideas and specific help. The second thing that you do is get in touch with a qualified sleep professional. You can go to the National Sleep Foundation website. You can also go to the AASM website that I mentioned. You can come to us at www.fusionsleep.com. And there's a real good description there of all the different services that we provide. And we're more than happy to see folks, but the thing that everyone can do is tell your physician about the symptoms that you're having and just kind of kick it around in a brief conversation. Hey, is this something I should look into? Maybe I've got some kind of sleep disorder. Sleep apnea is not the only sleep disorder out there, but the evaluation process can identify if and which disorder you may be dealing with.
At that Awake event, where is that going to be?
That's going to be at our location in Johns Creek at Fusion Sleep in Johns Creek. And the address is right there on the website at fusionsleep.com. We're going to have a couple of presentations that night. We're going to have One, dealing with the National Drowsy Driving Awareness Week that's coming up in November. That's a National Sleep Foundation event. The other thing is there's the largest home healthcare equipment show in the country is going to be in Atlanta that week, and I'm going to sneak down there and get some of the newly debuted devices so that we can introduce them to folks that are there and show people who are already using CPAP what's new and on the market and innovations and improvements in the products that they're already using.
So what do you think about that idea, Minor? Is it something that's already happening out there in the marketplace? Are employers getting more involved in this end of the healthcare spectrum and making it easy for their employees to look into their sleep pattern and get sleep studies?
They are, and we're seeing that in two specific things. A couple of articles recently, one was in Business Week, talked about the effect that sleep disorders can have on the productivity, particularly of high-end executives. Yeah, you know, you got someone in a high position, you want them effective and you want to get your money's worth out of them. The second thing that's actually getting more legal attention is commercial drivers, truck drivers and bus drivers and that kind of thing. In some states, you're even having to get tested for sleep apnea in order to get or maintain that kind of license.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I'm very pleased when I encounter folks all the time that are, you know, school bus drivers or local or long line commercial and drivers. I want to do everything I can to make their introduction to CPAP very comfortable because, you know, I drive on those roads and my kids and my grandkids drive on those roads.
What about like doctors? Because they work a lot of hours and sometimes maybe they're not sleeping. Yeah.
Well, in their residency, they're expected to not sleep. And once they get out in the world, I guess they're feel like they're better compensated for it. But all kidding aside, I can think off the top of my head of three physicians that I see regularly now just for supplies because they've gotten a good grip on their sleep apnea and they're dealing with it with CPAP.
I'd love to see a card and with my physician or my surgeon. I'd love him to be able to show me a card. I do not have sleep apnea or I am being properly treated for it.
A certification.
And I'm no fan of new legislation, but I would vote for something for truck drivers, bus drivers. I'd be all over that.
Well, let's get you to Washington real quick this time.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. But before we let you go, here on the High Velocity Radio Show, Rock, we ask each guest to share with us, if they would, a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and more importantly, what they learned from it.
I'll tell you, when I was in school at LSU, I was contemplating going into journalism, and as part of looking into that, I spent a couple of weekend days at the Baton Rouge newspaper talking to some of the reporters, and one of them, an old grizzled guy, you know, he looked at me and said, "This is a great career, you know, don't get into it for the money." But he looked at me hard in the eye and said, "You better love to write." And I took that to heart in that you need to really love the core thing that you do and whatever you do. And the mistakes that I have made that I'm willing to admit are the ones that got me away from patients. I've done a couple of things, including I went back to school to get another degree. And the school I was going to said, "Hey, you know, come on over and, you know, play enrollment counselor with us while you're in school. We'll maintain the salary you have now, but your tuition will be free." Well, you know, I'm easily seduced, and I went over and did that. It was just the worst job I ever had. Nothing wrong with the school or the job. I just found myself really missing the interaction with people that I had an insight in how to help in the particular way. I even was calling students patients, and I never got out of the habit of that. So I think the thing that I came away from that with is it's best to identify the intersection of where your talent is and where your love is and stay close to that. You can still evolve your career further in it, but stay close to those things that are really important to you and that you really will miss if you're not doing them.
Oh, that is so well said. Well, Rock, thank you so much for joining us. Can you hang out with us while we talk to our next guest?
Absolutely love to.
All right. Well, our next guest is a gentleman by the name of Ken Hilderhoff. And if you're in the Metro Atlanta market at all and have anything at all to do with marketing, you'll already know who Ken is. But to give you a little background for those of you who don't know, Ken is a Pennsylvania native and, as I understand it, a staunch Steelers fan. After serving in the military, he started his career with the Meade Corporation. He's currently CEO of Premier Marketing Resources and a CEO coach. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Good morning.
We are delighted to have you. I've got a ton of questions, and we won't get to them all, but maybe we'll get you back another time. But one of the first questions I have, are there any business lessons that maybe you drew on from your experience in the military that you apply in your work now or help your clients apply?
Well, perhaps discipline. And once you're committed to something, stay committed and stick with it. And that applies to business as well as in the military. Always do what you need to do and get it done and do it the best you possibly can. It leads to successes in any career path or any dream that you may want to follow.
And maybe in this market more than any other, what the other thing that I definitely wanted to make sure we made time to talk about, what tips, if any, do you have, what insights do you have to offer our listeners about any shifts in approaches that we might need to make when it comes to marketing effectively in what I think we all have to admit is kind of a slow economy right now?
Definitely slow, and we see that in our customers. I'm happy to say our business is still doing very well at this point. I think it's because we're so customer-focused, and we offer them a full value and range of services that is untouched by anyone else that competes against us, quite frankly. But if anything, in a slow economy, many companies pull back and they quit marketing. They quit selling as a result of quit marketing.
Sometimes it's one of the first things they drop.
Yeah, let's drop our advertising budget. Well, what do we need this for? We need to save some money. Let's lay off a few salespeople. I mean, this is the mistake that many companies make in bad times.
Why do you think they go in that direction? Like, what's the logic behind, like, you need sales, but your instinct is to shut off the machine that generates sales?
Just a bad decision-making process. And for those out there that have just cut back on their sales group and marketing budget, it's not intended to offend you. Just come to us and we'll help you with that issue. But it's, quite frankly, if anything, you spend the right amount of money in the right places, what you need to do. You need to focus and target your marketing efforts. Now, that could result in a reduction of some of your expenditures, but at the same time, you're focused on what you need to do and focus specifically on the market. Quit doing broadcast marketing. Don't spend money where you don't see the return coming back to you.
So more targeting is the way to go in this kind of environment?
Absolutely, more targeting. And certainly you need to go back and examine your value proposition. You know, take the products and services that you currently offer and look to see what benefits they supply those clients. And you may have to modify some of those things. You may even have to narrow your focus in the marketplace so you can be more effective and go after those markets that are in the growth path. Maybe it's healthcare and those kinds of markets that you need to focus more on, markets that are growing. So maybe you do want to do a little bit of a shift in terms of where your focus is in the marketing place today.
So it's since things are slower in a lot of areas, now's the time to kind of reevaluate?
Yeah, and one good source of reevaluation is certainly going back to your sales team. See what has worked in the past. They'll tell you, and take those ideas and those efforts and drop those things that don't have an immediate impact and focus on those things that have worked in the past.
And you've had quite a bit of experience in doing this kind of thing for clients, but also in your own career, I noticed that you had a really interesting transition from a couple of large organizations in a rebranding, redefining from one business to another. Can you tell us more about your experience in that?
Yeah, one of the most difficult things that many people can do when I was growing up, when I came out of undergraduate school, the first thing I do was apply to a Fortune 100 company because that seemed to be the path you normally went. So after working for two Fortune 100 companies, I decided that, geez, this is a lot of fun, but I spent a lot of time sitting in meetings and planning other meetings to go to other meetings. And that was just not my personality. My personality was, how do we get things done? How do we make things happen? And many times would sit in meetings planning projects for new paper mills and other factories that took us 5 years to decide on when that would happen and how it would happen. Today, you can have an immediate impact by the efforts you that you employ at your business today. And probably one of the most difficult transitions is going from a Fortune 100 company, say a $44 billion company, down to a business that's, you know, just under $10 million or less. And that's a tough transition. You don't have the supporting staff that you once have. You find yourself wearing different hats, many hats, and doing different things.
No helicopter, no limo, no executive washroom. All that's gone, right?
No, we have a yellow school bus with our name on it.
But on the flip side, you can be more nimble and you can react, and that must be rewarding, though. You can have a thought and execute it, you know, within hours as opposed to months.
Exactly. You can pull your core group of people together and say, geez, I had an idea. Let's just talk about it and see where the ideas come from and refine that idea and implement it that same day if you need to.
Right, and that's one of my favorite parts of being involved in small business is that nimbleness, and that's a huge advantage over those big companies.
Absolutely. You can respond much quicker to the changing in the economy. You don't have to try to turn a huge battleship at this point.
Right.
I just have a little rowboat that I have to turn.
But even within this small business environment, you've made some pretty substantial shifts. As I understand it, you essentially acquired a firm that did newsletters. Am I getting that right?
That's correct. It was a very successful company that's been in business for 22 years. It had a national scope. It was primarily known as the Newsletter Factory. It had a tremendous reputation. It dealt with companies, Fortune 100 companies, all the way down to small businesses. Perhaps 75% of the business was not in the state of Georgia, which may surprise many people.
Yeah, that does surprise me.
Now, what we've done over the past few years was the company was very successful as Newsletter Factory, doing so many different things. They were doing magazines, directories, brochures, and just a whole host of electronic things, e-marketing campaigns, websites. And when you're called the Newsletter Factory, you get yourself into a little pigeonhole because people say, geez, Newsletter Factory. So when I bought the company in 2005, I immediately changed the name to Premier Marketing Resources because we are a resource of many marketing materials for business communication and marketing. So now we can expand that, and that's what we're in the process of doing because so many of our clients now use us for so many different aspects of their business, from producing DVDs to directories to magazines to all their brochure and marketing collateral material, direct marketing pieces, etc.
How has that transition gone? Because that's obviously a major decision to go for a company that's 20 years known as one thing to changing the name of something.
It went very, very well because it was always done in the past, but it was done at a slower pace because it was not promoted quite as much as perhaps newsletters were. And no question, newsletters are still a major portion of our business.
Right.
But we had the talent in place and the people in place committed and trained to do that. And so it was just a matter of telling the customers, hey, we do other things than just newsletters. And they were so satisfied with the newsletters that they immediately gravitated towards the other products that we presented.
So that was an opportunity to grow your business just by re-educating them, reminding them of all the things that you do.
Just expanding. And that goes back to one of your original points about in a down economy. You have so many customers, perhaps, that you're not getting 100% of the business from. Go back to many of those same clients and see what other products. Try to win additional market share from those existing clients. So often we forget that, geez, we have only 20% of a client's business, and there's 80% more to get. So it costs a lot of money to go find a new client, but if you just go back to your existing clients and just see what else you can, you know, offer and provide a service for, there's many rewards for that.
And then in your business, that's one of your strengths because you do such a good job with customer service, and that helps having that deep relationship. It makes it easier to make them aware of all the different things you offer.
It makes the other sale that much easier because they said, geez, you do just a wonderful job on what you currently do with us for newsletters. yeah, I'll give you a chance. Let's look at some of the
right,
things.
Right, at least they're open to it.
Yes,
know.
They're opening. It's a
it's
much
not a
easier
cold call
sell.
Anymore.
No longer a cold call.
You don't have to answer this question if you don't want to, and we'll cut it out post-show. For all those that down, we get quite a few downloads, as you might imagine, after our live show. But I got to ask, is the newsletter dead? I mean, with all the – we got social media. We have all these other vehicles. Is the newsletter really dead now?
No, actually, we find it more active now than it has in the past.
Really?
Well, one of the reasons for buying the business, I really didn't see it at – reaching a maturity at any early point in my career, okay? So I say, I have so many years to work. What's the life cycle of a newsletter? Well, you use it internally and use it externally for your customer base. And many, many trade associations and marketing groups and research groups have specifically stated if you had a dollar to spend, probably the best dollar you can spend on your marketing budget is a newsletter. And there's many reasons for that, of course, if you want me to give you about 20 of those.
When you say newsletter, are you saying an actual hard-printed copy newsletter or an email newsletter?
It comes both ways. Today, still about 75% of our clients are still using printed media for their newsletter. But if you think about it, it's perceived as something of value. It's a soft sell. It's not a hard sell. It's something the client retains. It gets through the gatekeeper because it's focused and directed towards an individual. It is something that is meant to provide testimonials as to the products and services that you provide those clients. So actually, you're letting other clients sell for you. And if it's properly done, if you come to a company like the Newsletter Factory, Premier Marketing Resources, we know how to do that. There are tricks to providing an effective newsletter. But newsletters are far from reaching the end of their life cycle. We see more and more people embracing those as ways to communicate with their clients because they get hit so hard with all these emails and sales pitches, and people get turned off by hard sells and pressure sells. This is a softer sell.
Now, when you're do you provide all of the services when it comes to newsletters? Like you do the writing, you can do a turnkey solution?
That's one of the great values that we provide our clients. It's a full turnkey service. We'll do as much or as little as you need because some people can do some writing and within their company. But we provide the designing, the writing, the printing, the distribution,
the mailing. You do the mailing as well?
Everything.
I understand that you also coach CEOs. What is that like?
It's really another dream I had, so I've been doing that a little bit on the part-time. My employer doesn't mind it since I own the business, so I can get away with it. But I've always had a passion. I've always been involved in helping, sitting on small boards of small businesses and helping other people succeed in their dreams through developing strategies and marketing plans and giving them business advice on how to generate cash flow and how to manage their finances, etc. So I do work part-time for a company called TAB, the Alternative Board from Denver.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of
and,
that.
I have a board, and I help those businesses. It's a peer-type board where there's 10 to 12 people sitting on the board. And actually, if you think about it, those CEOs have the answers, for the most part, for their own questions, okay? But what's really great, I coach them about 1 hour per month, and I'm available by phone, but each month we meet and get together and collaboratively, discuss issues that they may have. And if you put 10 people around of CEOs around a table, you're going to have about 250 years of experience. So there's nothing that no one doesn't have an answer for or could assist that particular CEO in their particular business.
How rewarding is that for you, working with those and seeing their businesses grow?
Very rewarding. It's watching them succeed and helping them using your experiences. And, I in my past, what I've done was try to take what I've learned from those Fortune 100 companies, and there's a lot of good things in those companies, but combine it with the entrepreneurship of the small business and put those two pieces together because truly that can develop into a very successful organization. So I try to take the good from the big guys and the entrepreneurship from the small guys and put those together and help those CEOs succeed.
in that work and in your work with Premier Marketing Resources and the Newsletter Factory, have you come across just a handful of do's and don'ts that would be helpful for our listeners as they're thinking through? You know, they know they've got to do something. And you've already mentioned we've got to go back and just reevaluate our market, who we're serving, maybe take a greater focus. As they're doing that and maybe putting together a newsletter or putting together some type of campaign, are there just some consistent do's and don'ts that you could share with us?
That's a very good question. What you really want to do is focus on that client's target market. If you're doing a client newsletter, make sure that the articles really are targeted towards that client and some benefit to them. Don't focus on how great you are and start off with a hard sales pitch. Say a four-page newsletter, have five or six articles, mix it up a little bit, make it interesting. Maybe there's a message from the president that may be in there, and that should be a small thing off to the side on the inside.
But it sounds like shorter articles are better than the big, long, detailed white paper kind of thing.
You want to appeal to a broader interest group even within that target market. So what you really want to do is have, like you're suggesting, have four to five articles so that you touch somebody some way in terms of having something of interest for them. And hopefully, ideally you'd have all five articles being of great importance to them. But let's face it, maybe two or three are generally more interesting for them.
Right.
When you say short, how many words are you talking about there?
150 to 250 words per article.
And do you have a newsletter?
Yes, we do.
Better.
I get a very good price on it.
And so how can people get to your newsletter, get to your website, contact you if they'd like a little additional counsel in this regard?
Well, we're located in Atlanta and have been and remain there. And the website, we're currently doing a new website for Premier Marketing, but the website that has a tremendous amount of information is the Newsletter Factory website, and its initials are NLF, standing for newsletterfactory.com. Not to be confused with the National Football League. We get about 20,000 hits a month on our website.
For the NFL?
No, for ourselves, and during the NFL season, we get about 40,000.
So you have a fantasy football
section?
Yes,
we do. We should do a newsletter for the NFL.
I'm sure they'd appreciate that.
And how about a phone number if somebody wants to call you during dinner and sell you long distance, or I don't know, maybe hire you to help them?
You can call me anytime. I won't give my cell number over this air. But the phone number is 770-955-1600. And then follow the lead. My extension 106, and I'd be happy to talk to you.
Ken Hilderhoff with Premier Marketing Resources. Ken, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. But you know what's coming. We're not going to let you go until we ask you to share with us something for our Return the Learning segment. What we'd like you to do, if you would, is share with our listeners a mistake you've made somewhere in your career and what you've learned from it. Would you be willing to do that for us?
Well, if this was a job interview, I'd say I've never made a mistake.
There you go.
And just tell you all my strengths. But quite frankly, the mistake I made was not getting into business sooner. It's not that I didn't attempt to from time to time, but really focus and do it myself. I always try to look for that big, $20, $30, $40 million business out there that I could partner with some other people, because I only had a few pennies in my pocket. And that didn't go very far with a bank when you're trying to secure loans for millions. But follow your dream. If you want to go into business, follow that dream. Go in that business and do it sooner. It took me quite a few years until I finally stumbled into it. So many people are worried about job security. Working for a Fortune 100 is no more secure than working for yourself.
Maybe even less so nowadays, you think?
Absolutely. At least you know what's in your pocketbook. You know the cash flow. You know the banking. And you have control over your destiny because you can make those nimble decisions that Lee was referring to before.
Oh, I think those are strong words of wisdom. Thanks so much for being on the show. Lee, this was great. This beats the heck out of working, doesn't it?
You think?
Until next time, this is Stone Payton and Lee Cantor reminding you, faster really is better.